Today we're talking about two fast AF trucks, possible return for the Toyota Celica.
Huh?
That's right. We also have a very special guest with a name that rhymes with Jay Leno. But first, call Caldwell Banker because a for sale sign just popped up at Willow Springs. Welcome to the Big Three.
Hell yeah. I'm going to get my checkbook out right now.
A big old check.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Call it a couple hundred bucks.
It's a write-off for me.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Big Three, everybody. My name is Nolan Sykes. With me, it's Joe Weber.
I ain't no goddamn son of a bitch.
And Max Maddox, what's up?
You better think about it, baby.
Did you guys see Misfits or something?
Yeah, we did.
Oh,
we saw that this weekend.
We saw the original Misfits lineup, which was
with Danzig,
with Glenn.
Yeah,
wow,
everyone
Big
was there.
Buff Glenn.
Very cool.
Yeah, Doyle von Frankenstein was ripping up.
I don't think he's part of the original lineup, but
no.
he
was a roadie though for the original band.
When he was like 15. I know too much about the Misfits, but.
I had a bad time in the pit, too.
Yeah?
Yeah, I got pushed over twice, and my glasses got knocked off my face, and I had to, like, reach down and pick them up.
Did you know that Christina, our producer and now head of creative, is an enforcer, a pit enforcer?
No.
She's on the edge.
She goes on the edge. She gets the arm out, and she gets people moving.
Picks them back up.
Pretty hardcore about it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
What cool. You did Vegas this weekend?
I am kind of recovering still from Vegas. I did not get like wasted really, but I just really took it out of me. I didn't get any sleep on Friday night. Saturday we were at the pool all day, just super. It was like 106 degrees.
Oh man.
And you're at that triple decker strip club too.
There might have been some activities going down. Yeah, no, it was a good time. Yeah, and then yesterday we drove home. I'm just like out of. We stopped at Eddie's World.
What's
on
that
the way. It's like this giant. It's like a candy store. It's like a Buc-ee's, but they sell like a lot of candy and jerky, like a lot of candy. I have like half a pound of gummies in my body right now still. So,
man.
Anyway.
You seem fit to host a podcast right now.
I'm feeling it, man. It's feeling good. Okay, so let's talk about some IndyCar. Yeah. So, Andretti driver Jamie Chadwick became the first woman ever to win an IndyCar Next race at a road course. Very exciting
stuff. That's awesome.
Yeah, she qualified on pole and led all 20 laps at Road America.
That's even cooler.
She's the first woman to race in the series in 13 years and is the third woman all time to win an Indy Next race.
What is Indy Next?
It's like a feeder series for IndyCar.
Cool.
A lot of younger drivers. Jamie Chadwick.
I get it. Next.
Yeah, Jamie Chadwick is a multi-champion of the W Series, which is over in Europe. That was kind of like a women-only series meant to highlight, obviously, female drivers, but also maybe get them exposure and a chance to maybe get into maybe Formula 2 or Formula 1. Jamie decided to come over to the U.S., try her hand at IndyCar. It's working out pretty well. She's been having some good results, but this is her first win. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Also, we've worked with her before on Dirt 5. She was also in the game.
Oh.
We got to have a little like transatlantic phone call VO session. She was over at a studio in Britain while we were over here in
Burbank. I bet that scripted banter was pretty great.
It was great, Joe.
Joe, it was great. Did you write the scripted banter for that?
Uncredited, yes. Some of it. James needed a bunch of like James isms for it, and so I was in one of the writers meetings pitching on that.
Anyway, enough behind the scenes for a game that came out 4 years ago. Congratulations to Jamie.
Hell yeah, Jamie.
Very cool. This next story,
it's close to home
literally
might change the way, I mean, depending on who buys this thing, might change the way we do videos.
And every West Coast automotive creator, for that matter.
Yeah. Pretty much, if you're in LA and you make videos about cars, this news affects you. Last Thursday, the owners of Willow Springs announced that the fastest road in the West was officially for sale.
Ah, this is scary.
That's right. So if you play racing games or watch our channel, you've seen this track dozens of times, literally dozens. But for those of you unfamiliar with the track somehow, this place is a complex with numerous tracks located in the high desert north of LA. So you got Big Willow, which is maybe the most famous one.
Yeah.
That's the oldest track there. That's, you know, Carroll Shelby tested his cars there. Everybody tested their cars there. Then you got Horse Thief, which is more of like a drifting track.
It's only like for drifting. It's got a lot of elevation changes. It's got
crazy elevation change.
Yeah.
It's only like a mile long.
That's the only one I've ever driven.
Really?
With like Speed Ventures and stuff. I've never actually done Big Willow.
I've never done Big Willow either, but then you got Streets of Willow, which is what we film at.
No, I'm that was the one. Yeah, I was like, I've done Horse Thief and Streets.
Yeah.
So yeah, Streets is where that's where we're setting our lap times.
That's like a 2 mile course. It's pretty narrow. Not like it's not great for passing like Big Willow is, but it's very technical. And like a car like a well set up Civic, for example, can beat a C8 Corvette.
Yeah.
If the driver in the Civic is much better than the Corvette driver.
I drove in a not so well set up Civic. It was just a stock Civic.
Yeah, just stock Civic.
And I couldn't, the bowl on the back, it kept getting bogged down because of traction control. Couldn't figure out how to turn off traction control where it would let me just rip through that bowl.
I love Streets of Willow. It's one of my favorite tracks. There's also a kart track on the facility. There's a skid pad and a dirt oval. I did not know that.
Nor did I.
And also an area for autocross. I think that would also be on the skid pad up top. The skid pad we're talking about. Yeah. That's the balcony. That's also a very famous like grassroots kind of drift area. A lot of FD teams will test there. Adam Canapa goes there all the time. Like the balcony in the SoCal drift scene. That's like a mainstay of the scene down here.
Yeah.
And it can all be yours.
Yeah. All that could be yours. That's right, Max.
What I'm worried about is, a bunch of rich guys buying this and turning it into their private playground because it is so accessible right now. It's an hour and a half outside of the city.
Mm-hmm.
You could drive your track car there, go rip around and then come back within the same day. And it's just like good vibes right now. I don't want that to get lost.
Yeah, it feels very old school, you know. I mean, the Big Willow layout is the same it's been for decades. You get to the track and like the facilities, some of the main buildings are like pretty nice. The facilities are good, but it still kind of has a very old school feel to it.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of barriers for the tracks. There's not a lot of like the curbs are like pretty worn away. It still feels like it's just straight out of the 60s. It's a really cool vibe.
Yeah.
It could probably do with some upgrades, I think. Maybe some new bleachers, give the whole place a fresh coat of paint a little bit. It feels good. It feels I love going there.
Yeah.
And we go there.
I think the real fear is like, yeah, okay, somebody buys it, keeps it a track. That's great. Mm-hmm. What if they just turn into a bunch of upscale luxury condos?
I know.
What if they gentrify Willow Springs?
I know, but at the same time, I don't think Rosamond is the place to build that because, like, the track itself is pretty far outside of town.
I don't know. People drive to Thermal. Like, what the hell's in Thermal?
Well, there's lots of, it's near Palm Springs. Mm. And it's very, there's less
upscale resorts.
Yeah, that's like that was purpose built to be a luxury. People have their mansions there next to the track. I think sure, there is definitely risk of that, but it's not a situation like Auto Club Speedway in Fontana that's currently going under. Like, they sold some of that property to be built up as apartments. They're going to make the track smaller. I don't necessarily think it's a similar situation here because at the end of the day, it really is out in the middle of the desert, out in the middle of nowhere. Lancaster's nearby. That's a pretty big city.
Yeah, you got, what is it, Lockheed Martin's out there?
You got Lockheed Martin. There's a base out there. Is it Edwards? Is it Edwards that's out there? There's an Air Force base out there. You got Lockheed Martin, big manufacturer, obviously a big driver of the economy out there. But I think if you're going to build housing, it would make more sense at least for it to be Palmdale or Lancaster, where there is still land, but it's closer to where those facilities are rather than Rosamond.
The people that are selling it say that it's 55% cheaper to rent the track than at comparable tracks. So the people that are selling it obviously like are in it for the racing. I just hope whoever like buys it kind of keeps that same mentality and wants to do it for the racing. And not just kind of turn it into their playhouse.
I think you'd lose money if you did that. You know, I mean, this racetracks yeah. only stay up. There's no mansions.
You could still to supplement up the track income. Rates a little bit.
Yeah, but I mean, to have your own private, you'd have to like jack. You would kill it basically if you did yeah. that. I think. Like,
well, what if you sell like personalized bollards for $10,000 each, and you can have. You know, like your name painted on a curb.
That's like when they put the when during COVID when, with baseball games, they would put people in the audience.
Yeah, yeah, and you had to pay a bunch to get your like your cutout put in the stands.
I don't know. I think it's a interesting. Like that came out of nowhere too. It was like on Friday, yeah. right? It got announced mm-hmm. that this was up for sale, and now it's already. It's spooling up. You know, the competition.
We
could
do a
little
timeshare deal. Like, we get our audience to give us, like 10, 20 bucks. Like, you get a percentage of it, and we can all do this big communal racetrack.
Yeah, we'll have your name go by in the end credits really quickly.
It would make so much sense, like, how Hoonigan had the burn yard at Irwindale yeah. have some sort of thing like that, where you just have, like, your a steady stream of your own fans coming to the track all yeah. the time to a weekly or monthly event. Bring in the awesome. Revenue. I don't know. It's a tough thing. Like, I obviously am not qualified to speak on how to run a racetrack.
It's like a good business to me. No.
Yeah.
I think you could also offer services kind of like the theater that we did our live show in, built in production for it too. So if you want like a really cool video of your car going around the track from multiple angles, you could set up like cameras and have that kind of just be a package that you buy.
Interesting
too, because everyone wants the clips for IG for Blue Sky. Everyone's on Blue Sky right now, right?
In Vegas, driving home from Vegas, I passed by Speed Vegas, which I have still yet to do, but I was thinking about
that's
it.
That's the one where you can rent the supercars. Yeah, and drive around.
Maybe something like that on the premises makes sense too. That's There's cool. a few different driving schools that are surround like on the or. Nearby Big Willow that have facilities like either on the property that they rent or like literally right outside the property line. But having some like marquee kind of like business like that, again, it's like really far outside LA though.
I don't think distance is as big of a factor as you think.
You build a hotel.
You could build a hotel actually would make sense.
Car hotel,
yeah, a car centric
hotel.
Give them
some stuff to do.
Yeah.
With all like car beds.
Yeah, yeah.
Any drink out of like little car cups? Yeah.
Obviously, we're gonna keep an eye on this story. Keep you guys updated on who's gonna buy this thing. Who's gonna keep it alive? Who's gonna take the next swing at bat?
Or who's gonna kill it?
Last week, Toyota's own news outlet, Toyota Times, reported that company chairman Akio Toyoda revealed that he quote put in a request. To bring the Celica back last year. Now, most auto news outlets believe a new Celica would be a direct rival to Honda's upcoming sports coupe, the Prelude.
A sports coupe is like loose wording of it. They said it's not going to be fast.
Yeah.
It's like a little hybrid two-seater.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is the second time in a few weeks that a rumor like this has come out of Toyota. You guys might remember the SFR announcement from a few episodes ago. Yeah, like you said, Joe, I don't know. I mean, if it's how sporty is the Celica going to be if it's going against something like the Prelude, which is,
yeah,
when you look at the specs, not exactly super duper.
And I'm sure it's also going to be like a hybrid kind of very base level-y economy car. Yeah. But
which is not a bad thing. Yeah. Like hybrids are fast. Some hybrids are fast.
Ever heard of the 918, dude? Yeah.
I think it's a good idea to do it if it's competing with the Prelude. The bar is low.
Well, we don't know that.
Well, then, you know, I'm going
off
of what...
The Prelude looks sick.
It looks sick. Looks really I love cool. it. If the Celica looks sick, I don't like the early 2000s. That yeah. redesign was pretty
the
bad.
The Celica GT.
Yeah.
Oh,
but,
dude. The all-track one with the...
No.
That's the 90s one.
The 90s one. Oh, I'm talking the 2000s so
like,
one.
Yeah.
The straight-up, like, Need for Speed Most Wanted one.
Yeah.
You know... You could get one with a huge wing, though. With that body kit, that was pretty cool.
I mean, is there a spicy version in the works for this?
This is just rumors at this point.
This is all rumors, dude.
But Best Car actually reported that Toyota was working on a 400-horsepower 2-liter turbo inline 4.
Cool.
Which could be in it. This is still speculation at this point.
That would be insane.
But that, yeah.
400-horsepower out of a 2-liter, that's sick.
Yeah, so this would be kind of directly... If it is 400 horsepower, that would be more than the GR Corolla.
Mm-hmm.
It's too close to the GR Corolla to actually become a reality. I don't know if the Celica name brand is that strong enough that they want to like,
I think,
bring it back.
For me, this is, and I'm, of course, I'm extremely biased because I'm a freak nerd, but like if they brought back some styling that looked like the 90s one with the quad headlights. A little smaller, like two-door, fastback kind of coupe-looking thing. I think that could work for me.
Yeah, I'm thinking like the styling that Hyundai's doing right now with the Ioniq 5, that kind of throwback retro futurism thing. Yeah. Maybe that could work with the Celica.
Something like that, maybe. Yeah.
I think that kind of styling is what the Celica was in the early 2000s, where this looks futuristic.
No. That was just like, it was just like pure, I think, just style of the time. I don't think like they were going for a retro play like that. It looked nothing like the other previous cars, even like the vintage ones from like the 70s. But I mean, Toyota already has kind of like a retro styling kit going on right now with the Land Cruiser. You know, those have gone on sale now. I saw three of them this weekend and a new one. I saw a blue one. I saw a blue one this morning, and like they are, I think people like the retro.
I think they're,
and I think that's a cool little kick.
Dude, I'm seeing Cybertrucks like every day now.
Yeah. Well, that's because we live in LA.
Yeah.
I only saw one Cybertruck in Vegas, and that was one you could win.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Cool.
Nice. So they're like, please take this off my hands.
Yeah. So I don't know. Quad headlights, Toyota, do it.
I think it's cool that Toyota has their own newspaper called the Toyota Times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good for you them. Do?
I mean, I feel like maybe they're controlling the narrative a little bit, but I like the idea of it, you know?
Toyota is so great and introspective.
So a new rally-inspired all-wheel drive Celica is just a rumor for now, but there's plenty of here and now excitement in the world of all-wheel drive race cars this week. That's right. Ford recently unveiled an insane new EV demonstrator dubbed the Lightning Super Truck.
Nice.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Ford plans to take the truck to Pikes Peak for the upcoming Hill Climb Time Attack on June 23rd. This thing is based on the same tech as the Supervan. You guys might remember from episode 2 that crushed several records at Bathurst.
All right. Let's describe this image for our audio listeners.
Do you guys remember the Hot Wheels animated series? It was like Super Racers or something like that. This reminds me of that. It's pretty outlandish. It's got a giant wing on the rear.
Look at the diffuser. The diffuser looks like a big shell hanging off the back.
Yeah, that's like a 3-foot tall diffuser.
This might be the most ridiculous car I've ever seen in my life, guys. What the hell?
The wing looks like a sign that would be at an F1 race.
So I actually love this because Pikes Peak cars, there's a long tradition of insane aero like this, like having an enormous wing.
Mm-hmm. That front splitter's got to be like 3 feet wider than the truck
itself.
It's
insane. So I love that they actually went all in on this instead of just like making a really spicy F-150 with no aero at all or anything like that. This is really, really sick. So
being a pickup truck on slicks is just sick.
At 150 miles per hour, this thing produces nearly 6,000 pounds of downforce. What?
Does it need that much? I mean, that's wild.
I mean, the truck itself weighs about 6,000 pounds.
Yeah, so they're trying to offset it so it doesn't fly up in the air and become a lightning plane.
I don't know enough about aerodynamics to dispute that, but I think that sounds correct enough.
Let's just go with it.
Yeah. The truck is expected to make nearly 2,000 horsepower. Damn. And it looks like something your little cousin would make out of Legos.
Yeah.
I bet you want to daily drive this so bad, Nolan.
Me?
Mm-hmm.
Right, not today. I'm just down today.
This is low energy. This is definitely for you freak nerd types.
This is a freak nerd car. Certified freak, 7 days a week car.
And I feel
here.
Ford kind of leans into that kind of stuff, like the Supervan is just like, why did you do that? But also super cool.
Obviously, this thing will not be for sale, but you wouldn't want to sit in traffic with a 3-foot diffuser.
Would you rather have this truck or Willow Springs?
Willow Springs.
Yeah.
I don't know.
When the Willow Springs news dropped in our Slack, which some people gave us, we mentioned Slack a few weeks ago, and people in the comments were like, "You guys are weird for using Slack and not Google Teams." And I'm like, "I don't give a shit. Why you have a strong enough opinion on anyway?" In our Slack, someone mentioned that we should buy this and relocate the office, and I was honestly thinking like, yeah, I would move to. We could all afford a house in Rosemont.
Do we want to live there though?
It gets hot. Yeah. There's a pretty banging 7-Eleven there though.
Well, we just got to build that hotel and get the car beds going. Get those car cups you were talking about. We're having a good time.
Yeah. And then all the food comes on a little RC car being dragged to your table.
That's the other thing. There's one restaurant in Rosemont that we go to for when we're at the track. It's
I forget what it's called. It's a
Claim Jumper or something.
No, we do go to Claim Jumper on Lancaster.
So. It's like a taco place. I don't remember what they're called. We get it every time we're at the track.
Yeah.
Well, you usually go to this pizza place, the Hangar. Mm.
Shout out to the Hangar. You guys got some really dense pizzas. They're delicious.
Very dense.
The best thing to eat in the hot desert is like a really dense pizza.
Melty calzone.
Yeah.
We joke, but that's the move. Okay, so it's too bad that we can't buy this F-150. But I guess if we want a fast truck, we'll just have to settle for a truck with only 1,025 horsepower.
Oh,
Max.
Shoot.
I guess so.
So a 1,025 horsepower truck I can buy, you ask? That's right. Last week, Rivian dropped a brand new quad motor version of its R1T. It cranks out over 1,000 horsepower and nearly 1,200 foot-pounds of torque. That's right. This is the second gen R1 platform. They made a bunch of changes. I don't think it's a clean sheet redesign, but they made a ton of revisions to their second gen truck. So let's talk about it. 0 to 60 is expected to be under 2.5 seconds with this 1,025 horsepower version.
Yeah.
Pricing has yet to be revealed, but its 850 horsepower tri-motor sibling will start at $107,700.
So we're talking maybe $130,000 truck
before the markups and everything.
Right. Yeah. Look,
it'll still sell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People in West LA love these things.
I mean, people
I see
are
these
spending,
things all the time.
People are spending $300,000 on people, the Hummer EV when that came out. So
yeah. People, how do people afford this? What do they do? Like, what do they do? Next time I see someone, if I'm in like, I guess I would have to go to Erewhon or something to like ask them this, but like, I want to ask them what they do.
Hey, what do you do for a living?
Hey, what do you do?
I actually embezzled a bunch from PPP loans. Honestly, a lot of people did that shit.
Yeah, no, I know. That's why it's funny.
Like, yeah. Oh, man.
Like, so when I bought my truck, like, after spending the money, it was a $28,000 transaction.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit.
That's a dent.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
And then I see people driving stuff like this. I'm like, how do you do this?
I know.
You know what my biggest regret is?
I just don't understand.
Not investing in commercial real estate in Los Angeles in the 1980s.
So anyway, I guess that's how we'll get to that this new Rivian here.
But anyways, I love the Rivian. When we got the Rivian truck a couple years ago, I had so much fun in it. And it felt, you know, like the difference between driving in that truck and driving the Cybertruck. I don't know how to put my finger on it, but like it felt like the Rivian had been tested and it felt like the Cybertruck had not been tested.
Yeah.
Like there's just like things that nothing went wrong with the Rivian. Like the air suspension was great. The 0 to 60 was like as advertised. It just felt like a complete car versus the Cybertruck, which was like you know, like a very expensive high school shop project.
I agree 100%, Joe.
Yeah.
I like Rivian. Good for them.
Speaking of real estate, you know who has some really great real estate up in Burbank?
Who?
Mr. Jay Leno.
Oh yeah.
What do you say we go there now?
All right.
Whoa. Nolan, you look different.
Oh yeah. Well, these special effects are unbelievable, isn't it? This AI is just incredible.
Jay, thank you so much for joining the Big Three this week.
No problem.
This is a dream for us to be able to interview you.
Well, it's a
garage.
Nightmare for me, but thank you very much. One man's dream, another man's nightmare.
Jay, I don't know if you realized, but you had a cameo in one of our recent videos where we joined a PT Cruiser club.
Oh, I didn't know that, but I will have my attorney get on that right away.
So we brought our PT Cruiser to the Spring Fling. And you showed up in a tank car.
Right. Oh, yeah, the car.
The Mopar.
Well, that was built by Chrysler, so it was technically a Mopar.
Wild.
Yeah.
I know that the Spring Fling, and this is, you know, the Mopar annual car event, right, is something that you frequent pretty regularly.
Well, actually, I frequent almost every car event, so it's not
that's
like,
awesome, yeah, that you still,
that's interesting. Yeah, are there any, much, like, you know, because you have so many different car communities that you interact with, I'm curious if any stand out as the most interesting communities to be around.
Well, they're all interesting to me. You know, I like all kinds of vehicles. I'm not so much... Radwood, that whole thing is sort of new to me because,
oh, okay,
at my age, those are just used cars.
Sure, know?
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, oh, a car from the 90s. Well, that's like last Thursday to me. So it doesn't seem that unusual. But I do find it fascinating. And it's interesting what each generation will consider collectively. You know, like when I was doing The Tonight Show, we had a kid who said to me, oh, Miss Lonely, car, I like cars too. I said, do you have any collector cars? He goes, oh, yeah, yeah. I said, what do you got? He goes, a Miata. And I went, and I realized, well, he was 21. It was, that car was out before he was born. So it was like, oh, okay, that would be, to me, that's, yeah, just, that's a nice car, but it's,
but to him, it's ancient.
Fairly recent. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right, to him, he's,
it's
a,
just Model traffic.
T's, Model A's.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I noticed you have a Miata back there.
I do. I'm not a snob. That's probably the greatest sports car. I think that gets, that leads to Porsches and Ferraris. And,
absolutely.
You know, because, yeah, you drive one of those, and then you want something maybe a little more upscale, and you go to your Porsche or Ferrari or, yeah, Mercedes, whatever it might be.
Our first guest on the Big Three, we just started this podcast, by the way, a couple of months ago. Our first guest was Bob Hall,
okay,
the designer, or not designer, the
creator of the
Miata.
Right, yeah, right, right.
He,
right,
he kind of detests that designer label. But yeah, he was a journalist.
Well, that, I know him. So I talked to him years ago too, and you realize, the Miata is what Lotus really should have been. The Miata is a copy of a Lotus Elan. And if, you know, the English build one of anything, great. They build the one, they go, it's perfect. And then you go, we need two more. You know, they can't seem to mass produce. And they have it's like when the Mini came out, when Isagonis designed the Mini, he hated radios and cars. So he refused to put them in cars. So when you bought a Mini initially, it didn't come with any kind of sound system. So it made a huge aftermarket, you know, of the sound system. But, you know, they're just sort of funny that way. They don't, even when you watch English TV shows, they do like 4 episodes a year. Woo, we're exhausted. You know, America, you do 22 episodes.
Yeah, the original Office was like, they were burnt out after 2 seasons.
That's right. That's right. And their seasons are like 6 shows.
Yeah, and it's frustrating.
So, and it's the same thing with the automobiles. The Japanese, when I say copied the English, I don't mean they stole it. It's just, oh, there's a good idea. How can we improve upon it? I mean, the Miata, it's twin cam, 5-speed. I mean, everything a Lotus was, but just a bit more precision, getting the price point down a little cheaper, you know, because a Lotus Elan was the same price as a Corvette in America. What, a big V8?
Wild.
Or a little 4-cylinder? Well, V8, you know.
Yeah.
So, but the fact that they can make, like, they're so clever with the Miata. Like the latest Miata is not quite as light as the first one, but most cars, as they progress, get fatter and bigger and wider. And let's put 4 doors on it in case the kids want to go, okay, let's put a back seat. And then it's not a sports car anymore. When you look at a Mini now, it's like an American in 1960, he weighs 130. Now he weighs 210, you know.
And the belt line starts going up.
Yeah, the belt line gets wider. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, yeah. I'm curious too, you know, on that note, a lot of performance marquees like the Mustang and now the Corvette and possibly the Camaro now are becoming nameplates that are going to feature 4-door vehicles.
Yeah, or become an EV.
Well, it's interesting because to my generation, 2-door convertible was the way to go. And then you got a coupe because you lived in New England or something. Okay, it's still kind of sporty. Like when I talk to people 30 and under, a 4-door Charger with the big Hellcat motor is actually better for them than the 2-door because they can get in the back. And you go, yeah, you're right. But it just doesn't. See, to me, the 4-door always meant family car, station wagon, whatever it might be. So to people from my generation, big coupes. But big coupes are not particularly popular anymore because they're not as practical.
Sure.
That's
and
true.
So there's a more practical mentality now. And now you have cars like the Urus and the SUVs, which are essentially sports cars. They do everything.
Yeah.
Because I come from there when station wagon to haul stuff, 4-door to go to the store, take the kids to school, 2-door, ooh, go out, have fun, get a sporty dad, you know, all that kind of stuff. So
Speaking of your generation, what did you think of, like, in the early 2000s, the retrofuturism reboot of, you know, like the Chrysler Crossfire? And
well, I think it's great. I mean, it's all progress. You know, it's a bit like music.
Yeah.
For years, rap was not recognized in the same way rock and roll was not recognized. You know, in the early 50s, they didn't give Grammys to rock and roll artists because that was like kids music, or what they used to call race music, you know, like Negro music. That was a whole separate category because that's all. That ridiculousness.
It had to earn legitimacy before.
Yeah, it had to earn legitimacy. Yeah. It's all still music. But I know rock and roll guys that hate rap, and I have rap guys that hate rock and roll.
Absolutely.
But I think if you like music, it's the same thing with automobiles. I get it. I mean, I like all sides. Like, people get mad at me. Leonard, you had another EV on your show. I'm not watching Jalen's Garage anymore. Well, okay, then don't watch. But next week, we'll have a gas car. We'll have something you might like.
Yeah,
you can't do the same thing every week. And to me, I think the EV will eventually be the savior of cars like this, because, well, these classic cars, they do use more gas and they pollute. Okay. But their percentage gets smaller and smaller. Okay. So if everybody's driving an EV, there's not so much pressure to get our gas cars off the road. So I actually consider it a good thing.
Wow. Yeah. So the Charger EV, for example, you're a fan?
I haven't seen it yet. Let's see what it does. I mean, again, it still has to perform as a car.
Yeah.
You know, I bought the Tesla not because I'm saving the planet, although that's a nice alternative, I suppose, but because it was the fastest accelerating car you could get. I mean, it's faster than the Bugatti Chiron. I mean, it's amazing how fast
it is. Crazy.
But I've also got the Demon 170.
Yeah.
Which is like your sister's big dumb boyfriend. Football playing boyfriend, you know, so it's like a big lineman crashes into things.
It's a jogmobile.
But to race that against the plaid just go like this, step down, you go.
Yep.
It's like a rocket.
To beat the plaid with the 170, got a thing, put on the chiller, kind of traction control, line lock. But this time the light is turned green, the guy blew your door. it's all good.
Yeah.
It's all good. Yeah.
So, on that note, you drove a Chevy Bolt for a while.
A Volt.
Volt. Yeah.
Great car. I still think that's the future. You know, there's been a lot of pushback on EVs now because winter came and suddenly everybody's mileage dropped 30% if you lived in Minnesota.
We experienced that with the Cybertruck a little bit in the mountains.
Yeah. But with a hybrid, you get the best of both worlds. Like, we had a Chevy Volt here. Chevy lent it to us. We had it for 7 years. We put something like 93,000 miles on it. Only 3,800 of it was gas.
Wow. Oh, wow.
We would fill it up every December 7th, not for any memorial reason or anything. It's just Pearl Harbor Day. But just because.
Every Pearl Harbor Day?
Every Pearl Harbor Day. Not because it's Pearl Harbor, just because it just fell on that day.
Yeah.
It just became sort of a joke. But the idea was, the brilliance about the Chevy Volt was when the gas began to turn, which means sort of loses volatility.
Yeah.
It would automatically turn on the gas engine over the electric engine.
Oh.
So that's when it would set. So when we used up that tank of gas, now the Chevy Volt only went 40 miles on a charge.
Yeah.
But for here, we'd run an errand, you know, 22 miles, 30 miles, bring it back, plug it in, work on something else 2 hours later, or run another errand. Oh, okay. Well, now you're getting another 18 miles. Okay. So we put hardly any wear and tear on the gas engine at all.
Yeah, that's awesome. If you're just going to Bob's Big Boy and back.
Yeah.
Why not?
And as a hybrid, it worked brilliantly. I was sort of sad to see that go. I thought it was a pretty cool car, pretty nice car.
Yeah. I have a couple friends with the Volt, and I was convinced, you know, was skeptical at first, but if you're in a city and you're just commuting, why not?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Because there are people who like cars that are not car people. So you've got to appeal to them too, you know.
I'm curious, Jay. You know, I know, speaking of Teslas,
very curious guy.
I have a lot of curiosities that I'd like to extract from you.
Cheshire Cat.
I'm dying to know.
Yeah.
So you drive a Tesla, and I know that you've driven the Tesla semi truck, and you've been sort of I suppose had some brand affinity towards them. Do you have any thoughts about, I guess, Elon Musk's reputation right now? I think Tesla's having build quality issues. They're sort of in a little bit of a, tumultuous
period. Like, every time an electric car catches fire, it is a huge story.
Yeah.
Of course. Gas cars catch fire 10 times more often. When a gas car catches fire, you have an explosion.
Yeah.
When an electric car catches fire, you go, hey, what's that burning smell? All right, get out. Okay, and then the heat smolders in there. And it will burn, mm-hmm. but it doesn't blow up. It doesn't come apart.
It does
okay.
burn for like days on end.
That's true. But I mean, now they're learning how to deal with that. Mm-hmm. You know, most have a big, you know, kill switch under the hood. And also they have chemicals, fire trucks carry to pull out electrical fires. But I mean, the real genius of Elon, you know, Elon came here in 2007 with his prototype Roadster.
Mm-hmm.
And I drove it. I thought it was pretty cool. And he says, you know, Jay, I'm going to build charging stations all up and down the coast so people can charge for free. I'm going, yeah, right. That'll happen. But, you know, it did happen because as he was building that car, even before he built that car, he was acquiring land and places to put these charging stations. I see no other manufacturer. Everybody else builds an electric car. Where do I charge? You plug it on it. Plug it into your house. Yeah, if you can wait 2 days for your house to charge, you know. But he was doing, I mean, that's why he's successful. I mean, you have to decide when you separate the artist from the art or the business guy from the, because, you know, I mean, is he a genius? Yeah, he really is. Because I've never met anybody that understands manufacturing the way he does.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he has every aspect. We were down at SpaceX. Now, 3 years ago, or maybe 4 years ago now, that was just a swamp. 2 years later, there's rockets gone.
Mm-hmm.
And Elon says to me, well, you know, I want to do, I want to send a rocket to Mars every 3 days, have a rocket land in Mars. I went, yeah, that's a good idea. But I remember what he said about the charging station. I said, how are you going to do that? He goes, oh, let me show you. And he's got a room filled with these rockets, jet engines that, well, bigger than this building. Hundreds of them.
Wow.
To get ready to go to Mars. I mean, So I never underestimate the guy. Is he controversial? Yeah, I guess so. And you know, no matter who you are, you know, Colin Powell was a good friend of mine. And I asked him about running for president. And he says, the greatest day of your life is the day when you announce. The next day, everybody hates you because because half of the people are always going to disagree on whatever you say.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what happens.
It's like the, what you're saying about cars, like not every car is for everyone.
Right.
Pick or, you know, videos about cars even. Like you don't have to watch that video. You don't have to comment.
Right. Some people like the Lamborghini Corrado. Other people would rather have the Audi. It's the same V10, except one is quieter and not quite as showy, not quite as flashy. You know, it just all depends what you like.
That's interesting. You know, we drove a Chinese electric car a couple of days ago.
Right.
And there is this kind of looming fear. And I know now we have the 100% tariff on Chinese vehicles that's coming in. But what's your thought on Chinese cars coming into America? And do you think that's something that, you know, is going to be a shift in market?
Well, competition makes everything better. And the reason we have all these things is because there's competition. You go to Cuba, you people don't even have a personal computer. You can't have anything. I mean, the idea is somebody can make it better, more efficient, they're going to win. Right now, I find a lot of the Chinese stuff is not quite up to spec.
Yeah.
You know, plus you have, well, there's all sorts of situations with Chinese made goods and you know, especially with dealing with electronics. So I don't know. We'll see what it is. I mean, we live in a free market. You have the right to buy the best version of whatever you want. When I was a kid in the 50s, my uncle had a color TV. He was one of those guys that bought everything. He had a Cadillac, a color TV, an air conditioner in his house. I mean, all this kind of stuff, which was like, whoa, here's Americans riding cars with big fins and rock and roll and, you know, 15-cent hamburgers. You know, it's hilarious.
We had 50% of the world's wealth at that time.
Yeah,
right after World War II.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was a very optimistic period.
So you have famously said that you don't buy Ferraris.
No. I like Ferraris are excellent cars. We do them all the time here.
Yeah.
I just said there was a time when that was the only game in town. And if you wanted the Ferrari model you wanted, well, you had to buy two Mondials first. I just never liked. Then suddenly, like when I bought my Porsche Carrera GT, the one right over there.
Yeah.
They brought it here in a flatbed. They sent two mechanics to show me how to service it. You know, before it came, they give you a whistle and a pen and pencil set or a jacket. Just just something, you know, you just, oh, you feel like a customer.
Yeah.
Same thing with McLaren. McLaren, when I got involved in right at the very beginning, I paid exactly what the sticker was on the car. I didn't have to give the guy 10 grand in an envelope, mm-hmm. a salesman named Ace with a check jacket. You know, I didn't have to do any of that. It was like, oh, okay. No, Ferraris are excellent. I mean, I may buy one day. It's just, I just used to get, and I think anybody in that position would have acted the same.
Yeah.
It's not even Ferrari so much as the individual dealers.
Sure.
Because they feel they got you over a barrel, you know.
That's, yeah. And you don't maybe get the same white glove service as like a Porsche dealership.
Yeah. I mean,
something.
The main reason I have Ferrari is I can't afford all the books.
You know. But also, customer service is kind of the reason that Lamborghini exists.
Right.
Because Ferruccio Lamborghini came to Enzo saying that his cars weren't that great.
Right.
Got a bad response from him.
Right, right.
Said I could do better.
That's right. Sort of Peter Monteverdi. Ferrari is probably responsible for creating more car companies, some pissed off businessmen, than anybody else. No, I mean, they're wonderful cars. It's just, it's a different kind of attitude. You know, yeah. But no, I like them. I find they're pretty amazing. The F40, incredible car. Yeah.
So what's it going to take to get you in a Ferrari today?
Well, the one I always liked was 66 GTC. Because in the 80s, I was looking for a V12 car. David E. Davis was editor of Classic Car and Driver at the time. And he said, everybody should drive a V12 car at least once in their life. So, so I looked at an Espada for $24,500 or a GTC Ferrari for $28,500. And the $4,000 difference is a lot of money back in the early 80s. So I bought the Espada, which is maybe worth $1.5 million now. And the Ferrari's $800,000. Probably should have bought the Ferrari, but I didn't. But there was a time when they were just used cars.
Yeah.
I mean, you could get, my brother bought his Porsche Speedster for $800.
Oh, God.
And when he was offered $1,200 for it, my father said, sell that. For God, I don't know who this idiot is, but he's giving me a $1,200. Just sell the car. You know? So my brother sold the car for $1,200. He drove for like 4 years and made $400. My father.
Wow. That's a win.
That will never happen again. I just, the fluke, the guy was an idiot. Who, you know, the idea of cars going up in value, when I say fairly recent,
yeah,
I mean, like within 50 years ago, Duesenbergs were $20,000, $30,000. Mm. And then before World War II, they're $800.
Yeah.
But a Model T was $5. So it's all proportional.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, on the subject of that Courage ET, it says right there that you drove this vehicle 156.603 miles per hour.
You know, they have these phony records they give idiot celebrities to do. That's just one of them. Yeah.
You're so humble.
Is that your high score?
Well, that beat the standing record at the time.
I see.
But what is the fastest you've ever driven in any car?
Yeah, what's your high score?
Oh, well, let me see. I went 278, but I was passenger in the jet car. I remember I went to, when the ZR1, the last generation ZR1 came out before the C8, C7. We called up Taj Juchner, who was the chief engineer mm-hmm. for Corvette. And we said, hey, we want to take because we're trying to do 100 laps on 190 miles an hour with the Porsche. So we said, let's see if we can, let's go, we 200 miles an hour. Again. So I called Chad Shooting. Yeah, we got Meadowbrook, the track there at GM. So I said, let's do it, you and I. Okay. So I get there and we talk a little bit. We get in the car. I said, let's get ready to do the lap. I said to him, tell me about the first time you went 200 miles an hour in a car. And he goes, oh, I never have. You've never been? He goes, no. So your first time is with a comedian who's never been on this track in a car I've never driven before. He goes, hey, I guess so. Well, let's do it. And we did it. And we ran about, I think we averaged 204, but because of the banking, you had to run as high as 212 to keep that average.
Okay.
So it was about 200. But you know something? We were at 200, we were just having a conversation.
Hell yeah.
Wow.
And it is, like they say, you go 200. And this used to happen at the Indy 500. When you slow down, they used to have a riding mechanic. And once you go over 100, when you slow down to 30 miles an hour, you think you're going 5 miles an hour. And the mechanic would jump out and boom, boom, boom. just break, because they just couldn't.
Yeah, it's like the speeding effect.
Right, yeah, yeah. Exactly. But see, speed is the only new sensation of the 20th century.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
no inherent fear of speed. if you take a baby in a convertible and go 70 miles an hour and hold the baby up, they laugh and scream because it's funny. You take a baby and you put him in a room and turn out the lights, he cries. Because I think we have an inherent fear of darkness.
Yeah.
We don't have an inherent fear of speed because prior to 1900, man never went faster than 12 miles an hour, maybe, or as fast as a horse could run. So,
speed and flying are probably the two.
Yeah, those. Yeah, flying also. That's another new sensation.
Yeah.
But there was, it's not ingrained, although there's a fear of height that's ingrained.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Speaking of fear, is there any car in your garage that you're just terrified to drive?
Well, no, I wouldn't buy a car that's terrified to drive. Well, you know, I've got the jet bike.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. It's a jet engine on a motorcycle.
And didn't you melt someone's bumper in traffic? Yeah.
Well, you have 1 second of lag off and on. So if you're driving and you quickly shut off the throttle, you're still pulling hard for a full second. If you don't think that's long, try it. It's like
full throttle for an extra second. Yeah.
So you learn to figure, okay, there's a stop sign up there now. I'm going about 100 feet a second. I stop 2 seconds so I can. So you have to learn to figure out how to do that. You know.
Yeah.
But that thing's pretty. You know, every time I ride that bike, I get off of like, thank God. You know, it's a lot of fun. It is fast and it pulls hard, and it's a jet.
Yeah.
But you know, you're so glad when you get off it. Oh.
May I ask about your alleged beef with Orange County Choppers?
No, you know, that's not. I mean, they're not very good motorcycles.
Yeah,
I was mad because it was a bike that was built for me, and it was wired through the taillight, and I hit a bump, taillight popped off and broke, the whole engine stopped. Because why would you do that? But
the circuit was broken.
I mean, it was nothing. You know.
So no bad blood between you and Tuttle Senior.
Fine.
Cool. Beef squashed.
That's the only gotcha journalism we have for you.
I guess one other question I have.
Yeah.
You know, I think when you get to a point when you have 180 plus vehicles, you know, I know you've got doubles of certain vehicles. You've got doubles of the Cobra, doubles of the Mira. How do you decide, you know, when a car is worth adding to your garage?
Okay, that is what we call a first world problem. Well, obviously, you know, people will say when you look for a car, try to buy the best one. But when you're buying cars of which only three or four exist, you just get the only one that you can.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the yellow Lamborghini Miura, here's how I got it in the early 80s for free because it was a worn out sports car with a blown engine. You couldn't call the Lamborghini factory unless you spoke Italian. And even then, to get through just to get parts, there were no parts available. There's no internet. You couldn't search anywhere. You know, you go to the library and look up the car dealers in your area or something like that. So you couldn't get parts for it. So it's just an old worn out car. And now it's a $2 million.
Yeah.
So I got that one for free. And then in the late 80s, I saw one for sale for $90,000, which was high at the time. But I just bought it because, oh, okay. I'm trying to think of if there's anything that's gone crazy like that in your generation, cars that in around 2000.
Like, I mean, you talk about the Supras. That's like the big one.
GTRs.
GTRs,
perfect example.
Half $1 million now for a pristine one, V-spec, you know, and whatnot. So in terms of like, you know, acquiring new cars right now.
Yeah, what's on your list?
What's on, yeah.
I got car number 12 of the GTD.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
That's on the way?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I haven't built it yet.
Of course. Well, I mean, it's like on the way.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that I think that'll be an interesting car.
Yeah. Did you see it rip around the Nürburgring?
What did it do? Do we know?
They didn't release numbers yet, but it sounds amazing.
Well, you know, the thing I love about it is I don't find it a pet peeve, but when manufacturers feel their cars are, and it's probably Volkswagen's fault for this, they always feel they have to come up with a name. It's different. It's like Honda is a great name. Mr. Honda was an engineer, was it the engineer's engineer?
Yeah.
But to sell in America, we have to call it an Acura to put it above a Honda. This idea, like when the Ford GT came out, the first generation 2005, they said, nobody's going to pay over $100,000 for Ford. It's ridiculous. Well, if you make a product that's good enough, they'll pay any amount of money for it.
Yeah, those are
and now the new Ford GT, the last version, which they no longer make, is probably the only modern car to currently appreciate. Porsches, RSs and all that, those two.
Yeah.
But Ford GTs are now $1 million. They were $500,000 when they were new. It is a good car. And I love the fact that they didn't come up with some magic name for this Mustang. They call they're proud of the heritage. So I mean, I really like that. I like the idea that you know, a base model can have some cachet. You know, a classic example of that, there was a car called the Volkswagen Phaeton.
Oh yeah. Yeah. W12, right?
At the W12. And they called it was a big Volkswagen that was fast. Huge bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't sell it.
Right.
What do you think it became?
It's the EOS, right? Or what was it?
No, they became the Bentley.
Oh,
and then suddenly, same engine, same car. I mean, obviously different badging, make some changes. Oh, and that was okay because Bentley was a premium. So I get why manufacturers do that. But people go, what? $100,000 Volkswagen with a 12? That's crazy. Right. But, well, it's not the typical Volkswagen buyer. You know, you've got to educate the consumer to what you have. But that's what they did. But I like the fact that Mustang is taking on Porsche. I mean, the great thing about America, this is what I love about it, $12 billion company, huge profit, and they're the underdog against little Porsche or little Ferrari. Yeah, it just makes me laugh that we see ourselves as the underdog. Like that happened in 1966 when Ford won against Ferrari.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ferrari was a company they were going to buy for like $5 or $10 million.
Yes.
A drop in the bucket. Okay. And Ford, the underdog, they're flying in spare windshields on 747s for the cars. I mean, they had unlimited funds to just blow for it. And they, an American underdog spirit. What are you, hilarious.
Coming in with the nukes.
Yeah. That is a good point. All right. Well, I think we're wrapping up. Thank you so much for
gentlemen. Thank you, gentlemen.
Where can our fine viewers find you?
Where can they find me? I'm right here, actually.
Yeah.
Well, we have Jay Leno's Garage, which is on YouTube, and we feature all kinds of cars, which I like. I'm just amazed that people don't value other things and what. Like I see some people, we just do ultra high end supercars. Well, I mean, they're okay. But, you know, sometimes a Dodge Dart with a 4-speed and a 383 is a great car. It's a lot of fun. I mean, anything that rolls, explodes, makes noise, it doesn't even have to explode. It can be electric, you know. I mean, any sort of personal transportation that moves the bar forward, I find fascinating. And that's what we try to feature on my show.
Heck and yeah. I think you have the same ethos. We want to make cars approachable for everyone.
Right, yeah.
There is no bad car. You're very approachable. You'll give anyone time at a show and talk to them.
Well, the hard part is explaining what the word ethos means to anybody watching. People are like, where do I get an ethos? What year?
I think that's the new Audi ethos.
Yeah, the Audi ethos. It does sound V12, like a car. Yeah. That's the Audi ethos. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Jay.
Gentlemen,
I really
thank
appreciate
you.
This.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you.